The Means Subcommittee on Public Safety. Colleagues, today is March 30th, 2015. We're convened for the purpose of a public hearing on Senate Bill 5516, the budget bill of the Oregon Department of Justice. Let's see. Mr. Borden, do you want to tee anything up for us?
Co-chairs and members of the subcommittee, just as a brief note, the agency has submitted answers to prior subcommittee hearing questions, and they are posted on their respective days on OLIS. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Borden. And since we have Senator Boquist here, I think we'll start with him, and then we'll go to the BAM analyst, and then jump back into the testimony. So, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Brian Boquist. I am the chair of the Senate Emergency Preparedness and Veterans Committee, and it's sort of in that capacity that I'm over here to speak very, very briefly about one line item that falls under my committee's policy side, and that is the portion for the Criminal Justice Division and the intelligence functions of the Fusion Center. I think most of you are familiar with what the Fusion Center does and some of those activities. Most of the public are not. Most of what we talk about in the Fusion Center doesn't get out into the public. It's not on the 6 o'clock news, and we don't want it on the 6 o'clock news for a lot of specific reasons. However, having said that, just today, another event came up across the state that required everyone to be in the law enforcement community and in the public safety community to be reached out to. And that is one of the functions they do, along with other training functions within the Criminal Justice Division. As a side note, and just as a state senator, I would also remind you that it is the Criminal Justice Division that deals with things that come up in terms of public prosecution at the state level. And for those of us, we'd prefer that we were doing it at the state level rather than having it done on the front page of the Willamette Week in the Oregonian. With that, I'd be happy to take take questions in regards to the Fusion Center and the oversight our committee has. If not, I will go back to work.
Any questions for Senator Boquist? Thank you very much for your testimony. All right, we will jump into the BAM analyst, Michelle Whisper.
Good afternoon, Senator Shields and committee members. My name is Michelle Whisper. I'm with the Chief Financial Office. And what I'm going to present this afternoon at this time is some highlights from the governor's budget. Much of this stuff has probably already been presented at different points in time by DOJ. But one of the things I want to briefly touch on are from the governor's budget are the emerging issues. So what we have here is we look at crime victim services sustainability, and basically just to bring up is that the reduction in the punitive damage award funding for 2015 and 17, much of that funding is for administrative functions for the division. The impact would supporting it would affect and impact 9 positions under 3 major funds, the Victims Assistance Program, state grants to the AG Sexual Assault Task Force and Sexual Assault Victims Emergency Funds, and statewide domestic violence resource prosecution position. The defense of the Tobacco Master Settlement, as previously mentioned, this particular funding, the lead defense for the state's rights to receive these funds by proving Oregon has diligently enforced the MSA provisions. The child support system in the CSIS project and the continuation. Just to remind folks, this was a project that was a multi-biennium project that was supported in the 2013 legislation. And reminding folks that 2/3 of this project is funded by federal funds and so far has had federal administrative support along the way, along with DAS, CIO, and LFO. And the final is protecting Oregonians and unlawful trade practices, an emerging issue that adding staff to address unlawful trade practices, specifically patent trolling, new law pertaining to athletic agents, cases related to certain types of loan transactions, and the agency would expect to address about 30 to 65 additional cases each year. Another point to bring up is where this agency sits in the budget as it pertains to the 10-year plan. I'm not going to go into a great bunch of detail, but there is a split here between public safety and the child support enforcement deals with healthy people. So basically, you have the appellate, civil enforcement, criminal justice and criminal victims, and general counsel and trial. All are pieces that are directed towards the 10-year plan and supporting it. And like I said, the child support deals with healthy people, Oregonians in good health and best possible quality of life.
Michelle, yes. Senator Bates had a question for you.
Just a quick question. On the previous slide, you talked about unlawful trade practices. If the healthcare industry was brought under unlawful trade practices, how would that affect your budget? Have you done a look at that yet?
No, I have not, but I can get back with you.
I think
Senator
Bates.
Might,
we may be having that discussion later, so not in this committee.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, since we have a break.
Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mrs. Lisper, it should be obvious, but I just like to put it on the record. Your testimony is supported by Governor Brown. Coming from Governor Brown's office.
There has been no change in, Senator Shields, Representative Wisnett. It's my understanding at this time Governor Brown is supporting the existing governor's budget as it's being presented here today. I have not heard of any changes or been advised by that office of any changes at the moment.
So your testimony is that you understand that Governor Brown is supporting your presentations and the
That would be my understanding. I can stand to be corrected, but
thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
The back to your last slide, please. The Senator Bates mentioned unlawful trade practices. The impact financial impact on the department. Did the bills that were passed on these? Did the revenue impact statements reflect what you're concerned about as far as emerging issues? In other words, you're saying there's going to be a financial impact. Did those bills that were passed by this body, did their financial impact statements reflect the same position that you're presenting to us now?
And Senator Shields, Representative Wisnett, are we talking about, for clarification purposes, the 2013-15 budget? That's what I'm addressing, the impact as far as we're developing the governor's budget for 15-17.
Would you like to clarify?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we passed in that last session bills that now you're saying is going to be a burden on the department. So when we passed those bills in the last session, there's supposed to be a financial impact on this department. My question to you, do they match?
We could ask the agency to reply to us. I assume BAM might not have that information.
I do not have that information.
Could we get a response from the department, perhaps, or from BAM, and then send it to the professional staff?
Yes.
Representative Wisnett's question is a good one. A lot of times we never go back to double check whether or not our math added up when we passed the bill, and I think that's the point that he's getting at.
Yes, Senator Shields, Representative Wisnett, I do expect to get back to you as well as to Senator Bates' question.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Please continue.
Okay, I believe I wrapped up in addressing the purposes behind the 10-year plan and what the agency does in supporting the 10-year plan at a very high level. I was not planning to go over any more of the expenditure history because it's already been covered by the agency along with the revenue history they did cover in their presentations. The thing that I would wrap up with are the investments from the governor's budget at this point in time. So what we have, which is basically not much different than the emerging issues that are representing the budget, but the investments are for crime victim services due to the fact that they are projecting a reduction in punitive damage collections awards. We are supporting their request. The defense of the master settlement agreement and tobacco revenue, we're supporting that request as well. Same thing with the CSIS project for child support. In supporting the investments under the DUII resource prosecutors program and the supporting efforts necessary for increasing the number of cases and the complexity is combined into one for litigation support. Charitable fees is the other policy option package that we are supporting is the increase on the charitable fees. And the only other thing that I would bring to the attention that there are two major differences between the governor's budget and the co-chair's framework is at this time, the co-chair's framework as originally submitted does not include the 200 plus thousand for the defense of the master settlement or the project for the child support system, the CSIS project. And with that, I can take additional questions.
All right. We do have tons of people who are also signed up to testify. So if we ask many questions, it just means we'll have to stay longer.
Sorry, Mr.
Representative Wisnett. We have a volunteer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to ask. The governor did not address Senator Boquist. Found time to come down and testify on his importance of the fusion center, which I support. The governor's not commenting on that in our. Is the governor's budget, does her budget also delete the funding for the fusion center?
Senator Shields and Representative Wisnett, at this point in time, I don't have an answer for that. It's originally part of the original governor's budget.
His budget and her budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. We've got 17 people to testify. If everybody comes slightly under 3 minutes, we should be able to get out on time. So why don't we bring up, first of all, Commissioner Shiprock, DA Brad Berry, and Sheriff Tom Bergen.
Start since I was called first. I'm Commissioner Judy Shiprock. I'm a Multnomah County Commissioner, and I'm also here to represent the Association of Oregon Counties. I'm a former legislator, so not quite the tourist that I appeared when I was having my photograph taken with the Attorney General earlier this afternoon. But I'm also a former prosecutor, and so I really appreciate the relationship that our local district attorney's office has with the state's attorney general. And those are all reasons I'm really pleased to be here today to support the budget for the Department of Justice. I really understand, I sympathize with the tough budget decisions that you're making in the coming months. But I want to talk just briefly about the interrelationship between what counties do on the ground every day and the budget request that is in front of you, and in particular with regards to consumer protection, child support, the defense of the tobacco master settlement agreement, and assisting crime victims, which remains an important issue for counties across Oregon. Protecting senior citizens is also a critical issue for us. We support the department's proposal to create an elder abuse resource prosecutor to provide technical assistance to our local law enforcement prosecutors and other community partners so that we're using our best practices in protecting our community's elderly citizens. You know, the demographic bubble is pushing us towards an increasing senior population, and protection against scamming seniors is going to become increasingly necessary, and scamming seniors is a growing problem. So In addition to supporting the DOJ resources in those areas, I also want to comment that our Attorney General's office has been tremendously supportive of the work the Association of Counties has done. We conducted 4 public safety summits across the state, and the AG's office had a representative at each one of those. So in conclusion, to the co-chairs, the subcommittee, and members of the subcommittee, thank you for listening to my testimony this afternoon.
Thank you, Commissioner Shipwreck. Yeah, Barry.
Thank you, co-chairs Shields and Williamson, members of the subcommittee. My name is Brad Berry. I'm the Yamhill County District Attorney, and I, too, am here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association as I co-chair the legislative committee. Obviously, the budget before you is multifaceted, and I thought I would limit my comments to primarily a couple of those, since there isn't a lot of time to address all of them. The first deals with the Criminal Injury Compensation Fund. As you've heard, the testimony is likely that, that fund is diminishing rapidly and could actually become insolvent in the next fiscal biennium. It's an extremely valuable tool to many, many victims in the criminal justice system. As I've said many times, victims are the only participant in the criminal justice system that are brought there unwittingly and unwillingly. And we have responded to that in part by having a fund that would allow them to get counseling, pay for funeral expenses, and the like. I also want to remind you that often the victims are a very modest means, and without these funds would have no access to these necessary resources. The Criminal Justice Division of the Department of Justice is one that most often touches in the prosecution, and we rely on them in many ways. First and foremost is the DA Assist program, who will partner with us, will aid us, will advise us, will help us when necessary. It is most important, I would suggest, to the smallest of the counties in the state who don't have the resources nor the person power within their offices to handle complicated cases. And DA Assist is always there to answer calls, even when we have individuals. I'm a medium-sized county, but even when we have lawyers in trial, we can call up there and say, we've got this issue, what do you have, and get an instant response. And it's a resource that we rely on with frequency. Within the budget here is the Elder Abuse Prosecutor Package, and I want to address my last comments towards that. As Commissioner Shipwreck said, we have an aging population, and where I might differ with her slightly is that I think we already are seeing an epidemic in elder abuse cases. It's easy for us to spot, acknowledge physical abuse of the elders, and we handle those. But what is often complicated are those cases that are financial fraud, most often, I would say, perpetrated by someone who is known to the victim, to the elder victim, and oftentimes is a family member or close friend to the victim. And the principal problem with these cases is attempting to, quoting a movie, follow the money. The inability of relatively small offices and agencies, sheriff's office and police departments, to have those who are highly trained in financial fraud cases and tracking money in various directions, it's very, very difficult to be done. And that's how those cases are put together, to show that these elderly people have not only had their assets and resources stolen, but certainly it is common that they end up destitute while somebody else has profited from stealing from them. And I look at this, not only is there a prosecutor to advise, much as we have a domestic violence prosecutor and DUI prosecutor within this proposed program, but 2 financial fraud investigators. And the ability of all of us around the state to reach out to them for assistance is invaluable. Thank you for the opportunity to share these thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. District Attorney.
Sheriff Bergen.
Co-chairs Williamson and Shields and committee members, thank you very much for having us here. I'm Sheriff Tom Bergen. I represent the Oregon State Sheriff's Association on the Titan Board, which is a terrorist information threat assessment network. I also represent them on the legislative committee as well. I'm here to in support of this budget going forward, mainly for the Titan end of this. I've been on the e-board since its inception, and it has been invaluable to many, many communities throughout Oregon. We put together law enforcement bulletins that come out on a daily, sometimes weekly, always weekly basis, but sometimes daily, which is very important. I gave them three of them. Just remember that they are law enforcement sensitive, and we don't really want them floating around the Capitol and so on. So we also put out a, for the first time ever last year, Oregon Titan Fusion Center went together with Washington State Fusion Center, and we put together a counter-violating extremism in schools, and violent extremism is what I'm trying to say, sorry, and on rampage shootings. And it's been a very well-attended class. It was a very, it's excellent material for the officers involved with these type of events. Titan does a lot of work regarding, say, Hood to Coast, where 100,000 people end up in my county. We do threat assessments on those to make sure that we don't have the, well, to try to, you know, mitigate, I guess would be a better word, the type of situation that occurred in Boston when we have the bridge run, same type of event that comes from Washington to Oregon. They all end up in Astoria. That we did a threat assessments with and had our bomb dogs and so on there. So this is a vital part of this budget, and I would highly encourage you to please support the Titan Fusion Center in everything that it does for law enforcement, not only throughout the state, but we the Fusion Center analysts and everybody also connect with other parts of the U.S. So it's vital, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. If we please bring up Sybil Hebb, Carrie Naughton, and Nikki Terzieff.
Thank you. Chair Shields, Co-Chair Williamson, and members of the committee, Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here today in support of the Department of Justice budget in Senate Bill 5516. As you all know, the Oregon Law Center provides services to low-income Oregonians, and a significant and growing percentage of the requests for assistance that come through our offices are because of domestic or sexual violence. And so I will be focusing my remarks on the critical services within the Crime Victim Services Division of the Department of Justice that are for victims struggling with those issues to become survivors and achieve safety for themselves and their children. So there are four quick programs that I wanted to mention that are specific to assistance for individual victims who are struggling in their own cases. And the first and most critical is the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund. That is a fund that got some critical investments last session, for which we are very deeply grateful. It is now funded at $8.2, I believe, million dollars for the biennium, and it provides funds. It's the only source of general fund dollars. It provides critical stability and funding for our network of nonprofit domestic violence and sexual assault shelters, hotlines, support and safety services. And those dollars are great investments because they lead to a 60 to 70% reduction in the severity and reincidence of violence down the line. So when a victim coming forward needs help in getting safety, if she has access to, he or she has access to emergency, confidential, immediate assistance, it makes a huge difference in the trajectory of her life and the life of the children involved. And so we really want to focus on that. I wanted to also mention that despite investments, there is still a critical underfunding, and we're hoping for an additional $2 million to be invested into that program for this biennium. In 2013, there were still 12,000 requests for assistance that we were unable to, that these programs were unable to satisfy. And most of those requests come from people who have minor children in the home with them at the time that they're seeking assistance. So I'll move on to, and I would say that there's also a support letter on the record in OLIS from the Alliance to End Violence Against Women, as well as from individual survivors and advocates working at these programs from across the state. Three other programs I wanted to briefly mention that are specific to individual assistance for survivors. One is the Address Confidentiality Program. And that's a program that this legislature created a number of years ago that is designed to address the need when survivors are having to move repeatedly to stay away from a person who is abusive and is persistent and has continually tracked a survivor down. And this program provides a critical address confidentiality capacity so that survivors can have some level of stability and normalcy in accessing services and using the public domain. And that program provides assistance to almost 2,000 Oregonians, 459 households, some of whom have minor kids, and other household members who are protected through the program. It's critical. Another program is the Crime Victims Compensation Program. DA Berry mentioned that, and particularly for our clients who are low income and who are participating in the criminal justice system, therefore eligible for these crime victim compensation funds, many of them may not have access to the counseling and medical assistance and other treatment that can be covered through that program without that assistance. The fourth I'll mention briefly in support of individual assistance is also connected to the criminal justice system, and that is the DA-based Victims Assistance Program funds, and those services are to provide advocates at the criminal justice system, at the courthouse, so that victims who are participating in that process have someone to help them navigate. It makes a very big difference in how that process works for them, and we appreciate those services. Then there are three programs that I wanted to mention very briefly that really have to do more with statewide practice, standards of practice, and really approaching the big picture and encouraging all of our communities to have a coordinated response to domestic and sexual violence victims. And one is the Sexual Assault Task Force. You'll hear more about that from witnesses down the line. That program has played a critical role in really raising the level of practice in our response to sexual violence in our communities, particularly important right now given our concern around the incidence of campus sexual assault and the great need to provide greater coordination around assistance to victims on campuses. Two additional systems that are in the central office at the Attorney General's office. One is the Domestic Violence Resource Prosecutor, and that position has had such a huge impact on all of our communities and our clients in those communities struggling to deal with domestic and sexual violence. And that prosecutor position has really played a critical role in making sure that at the individual local level, community responders are working together. We very much appreciate that work and the training and technical assistance that is available on just a daily basis there. And we support the existence or the creation of a new model around that is based on that same model, but specifically focused on elder abuse for the reasons that have previously been stated. So there's a letter from Legal Aid Services of Oregon from one of our senior abuse attorneys in support of that program and just the difference that it will make to her clients. And in closing, I would just say that the funds for individual services to victims are really critical in achieving immediate safety, but the programs that are available that provide statewide big picture practice assistance are also really important in helping us move towards the best practice for victims. So thank you very much for all of the work.
Thank you, Ms. Hubb.
Co-chairs Shields Williamson, members of the committee, I am Nikki Terzieff. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. We are the statewide nonprofit that offers technical assistance, training. We marshal foundation dollars, and we work with the Department of Justice. We've enjoyed a very hardworking and great working relationship in order to obtain additional funds for ODSVS. ODSVS, as Ms. Hebb mentioned, is the general operating dollars. It keeps the phones ringing. It keeps walk-in centers open. You heard, this committee heard 2 years ago of the dire straits, folks showing up on a patio and not having services provided for them. That ODSVS is what allows staff and advocates to continue to help survivors in each one of your districts, all the way across the state, and now also on tribal lands. So we'll urge an increase, along with Ms. Hebb, for $2 million. Just round us up there, ODSVS, for a nice square $10 million. Thank you.
Thank you. Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chairs Williamson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Carrie Naughton, and I am the Crime Survivors Program Director at Partnership for Safety and Justice. We are an advocacy organization that's been working in Oregon for about 15 years, and we are dedicated to building a public safety system that works for everyone. And for us, we believe that that means we need to be smart on crime by putting appropriate accountability of offenders first, making sure that crime victims and survivors get the resources that they need to be safe and rebuild their lives, and also greater investment into proven crime prevention programs. So these values drive our work, and it is why I am here today to advocate for a $10 million allocation to the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund. Personally, I've been able to work with and on behalf of crime victims and survivors for the past 16 years, and I have seen time and again just the incredible courage that it takes for someone who is in a very threatening situation at home to reach out and ask for help and really find that hope from deep within that life can be different. Last week, I had the incredible honor of being able to meet a survivor who was here in the Capitol building as part of our Awareness Day. She actually may have met with some of you or your staff. It was not safe for her to come here today and testify on the record, but she wanted to share her experiences with you all today. And so, if you don't mind, I'd like to read a letter that she submitted that is also part of the packet from the Oregon Alliance to End Violence Against Women. She says, "My four children and I are domestic violence survivors. My children and I were lucky to have been able to stay safe while in shelter at a time when nothing felt safe. We had nowhere to turn and nowhere to go after fleeing our home in hopes of a future, a life without abuse. So many women do not get the opportunity my kids and I got. The beds in shelter are almost always full. The shelters have to turn so many women and children away. Many of these women have nowhere to go, no idea what steps to take to start over, to become a survivor rather than a victim. With more allotted money for domestic violence shelters, many more women would be given the opportunity at a new life, with the skills taught at shelter to stay safe. Please support shelter, women and children to start over and to be safe." And as Ms. Hebb mentioned, in 2013, there were almost 12,000 unmet requests for emergency shelter from violence, and that's about 2 unmet requests every hour of every day of the year. Rounding us up as Ms. How do you say your last name? Terziev.
Oh, chairs, that's correct.
As Nikki said, would get us closer to helping more people. It wouldn't entirely solve the problem, but it would certainly give more women and more children the ability to get safe and to stay safe. So thank you for your time and consideration, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. All right. Michelle Rowland, Deb Bridges, Jane Downing.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Shields and Williamson and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Roland Schwartz, and I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force. The task force is a private, nonprofit, statewide agency whose mission is to facilitate and support a victim-centered approach to the prevention of and response to adolescent and adult sexual assault in Oregon through multidisciplinary collaboration. Comprised of over 100 Oregonians appointed by the current Attorney General, members serve on 1 of 8 multidisciplinary subcommittees. The task force is here today to support passage of House Bill 5516 and specifically funding for Crime Victim Services Division. We believe that CVSD provides life-saving support to victims of crime through financial assistance and serves as an important safety net for victims of violent crime who otherwise would be overwhelmed by the financial burden of their victimization. Funds support victims of sexual assault specifically by covering the cost of a sexual assault medical forensic exam and ensuring that victims have access to victim advocacy from Oregon's community-based, systems-based, and tribal advocacy programs. Particular note today, the CVSD state discretionary grant supports the Sexual Assault Task Force. And in the interest of brevity, I'll highlight a couple of the activities that the task force conducts in the ultimate benefit of victims across the state. First and foremost is the state discretionary grant supports the Sexual Assault Training Institute, which is comprised of SATS staff and up to 20 multidisciplinary technical experts that provide training to Oregon's law enforcement officers, prosecutors, victim advocates, sexual assault nurse examiners, and campus practitioners, as well as the county sexual assault response teams and tribal sexual assault response and resource circles. The CVSD state grant funds support our sexual assault nurse examiner program, whereby we offer training to sexual assault nurse examiners, nurse practitioners, and RNs across the state, readying medical providers to conduct a medical forensic exam for acute cases of sexual assault, ensuring that victims have access to comprehensive, specialized health care while also preserving forensic evidence and documentation of injuries. Additionally, funds support the Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner Certification Commission, which the task force convenes to oversee certification of trained SANEs across the state. Oregon currently has 136 certified SANEs and more working towards their certification, a critical step towards elevating the level of high-quality care that we offer victims in Oregon. And last, I'll wrap up with the most recent activity that the task force was involved in, and that was the development of a campus reporting options website. The website was developed and spearheaded by our campus subcommittee and vetted through student focus groups. In an effort to provide students with information about the resources available to them on and off campus, both reporting and support options. And to date, we have received 2,100 page views since the site went live in November and are receiving national attention as other states are looking to replicate the website for students in their communities. Again, we believe that House Bill 5516 will positively impact victims of crime through the appropriation of funds to a Crime Victim Services Division and are proud to be here today with our partners to support its passage. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Senator Shields and members of the committee, my name is Deb Bridges. I am the director of the Yamhill County Crime Victim Services Division. You heard from my DA, Brad Berry, earlier. I think Sybil Hebb very eloquently sort of encapsulated all of the issues that are important to crime victim services, and I'd like to give you a brief perspective of boots on the ground. I'm as a director of the Victim Services Office, we provide services to all victims of crime in Yamhill County. I'm a domestic and sexual violence advocate that responds to the scene. I go to the hospital exam, so the SAVE Fund is very important. I see it, sadly, monthly in our communities about how important those funds are. I'd like to say that the domestic violence prosecutor has probably been one of the most helpful programs that reaches across disciplines that we see directly. So even this Friday, the Domestic Violence Fatality Review Team is coming to our community to review a very sad case of a father who chose to kill his wife and two children on 4th of July a few years ago. So that work that they do, and you get those reports as members of the legislature, you will see sort of the outcomes from those and the work that then follows with the work of the folks behind me. So that's really important, and I see that from the law enforcement officers that I work with, how much that training that that domestic violence prosecutor brings to the communities and sort of builds that capacity of those teams to be able to successfully prosecute these cases. Crime victims compensation is a vital program for our victims. Daily, we work with folks who come in and have financial burdens as a result of the victimization. And as you heard DA Berry say, that victims are the only ones who choose not to be part of that. It's heartbreaking to sort of see that financial aspect and then be able to help folks understand that crime victims compensation has a way to help them avoid debt collectors. Because let me tell you, if you don't get your hospital bill paid right quick, those debt collectors are on you like very quickly. So that is a resource and a tool that we are able to offer victims. I am a proud member of the Sexual Assault Task Force, and so it is great for me to be able to sit here next to Michelle and say ditto to the great works that they are doing. I'm on the Legislative Public Policy Committee, and for the last 4 or 5 years that I've been on that group, I've seen
sort of that capacity building momentum that comes out of that committee as well. And so I think the main thing that I want to say in support of the Attorney General's budget, and I know that you've heard people make a big request. Sure, I'd like $10 million more for district attorney-based programs, but I know I'm not going to get it. But I would say that the 10 years that I've been doing this work, I have seen the momentum of services to victims move forward. And with every attorney general, I'm very proud to see that that momentum and that care and compassion, it stays a primary perspective and a goal. And so we wouldn't be here 10 years later without the work and the energy of the Attorney General's Task Force, or Crime Victims Compensation Division, Crime Victim Services Division, sorry. We have 8,000. I was trying to say things and not call them by their alphabet soup. So the Crime Victim Services Division has really built that momentum and really recognized the constitutional rights of victims, and we are the folks that are championing those. And so I hope that you can support this budget, and I would entertain any questions that you have.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Jane Downing. I'm the Executive Director of the Center for Hope and Safety, serving victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking here in Marion County. I've been doing this work for 24 years, and I have to second everything that Ms. Bridges talked about as far as the momentum and things moving forward. We are in a very unique time in our state. We're kind of at a crossroads for saying we are doing so much more for victims than we've ever done before. And I will tell you that in the last 4 years, our numbers of individuals coming to us has doubled. Last year, we had more than 20,000 contacts to our program. And so we have, right now, we have less than 14 FTE on our staff. Portland State University did a study in 2006 and found that we should have more than 30 advocates serving just for the most critical crisis intervention services. We have 13.7 FTE, and that's an increase for us thanks to the work that the legislatures have done in the past to see that ODSVS receives an increase. I think about what we would have done if we hadn't had the ability to do that, and it makes me almost want to cry. When you think about all the folks who need our help and services, you just want to do more. You want to be able to do more, and I know that you have lots of requests coming for you from, you know, folks coming to you and saying, we need more, we need help with that. And all I can say is we have more coming every single day. We opened up a new advocacy office, and we have been completely inundated. We've had more than 1,500 people walk through the doors in our first 6 months, 750 of those in crisis. And all of those were needing things like a safe shelter. They needed support groups. They needed all these different things that we're able to provide, but we know there's so much more. And our sisters in that are in the victim assistance DA programs, all the different programs that you heard about, we are all working really hard to have a safety net for victims. And we so appreciate all you've done. And please help us to continue to do more to be able to meet those needs of folks who are the most vulnerable in our communities. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Thank you for your testimony. Let's see, Barbara Bernstein, Allison Kelly, Barbara Pescheria. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Do you want to go in order of being called, or?
Go ahead.
Okay. Co-chairs Shields and Williamson and members of the subcommittee, my name is Barbara Bernstein, and I'm the interim director of Elders in Action, and I'm here today in support of the Elder Abuse Resource Prosecutor. Elders in Action is a nonprofit organization that supports older adults in Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties. And through our personal advocate program, we get about 250 and 300 calls a month from older adults, and about quarter of those are elder abuse related, neglect, exploitation. And we often see that family members need the support that this program would support. For instance, one of our callers was a grandmother who called asking for financial assistance, and through that conversation, we realized that she was a victim of exploitation from her grandson. While living with her, he had racked up about $800 in cable bills, and she decided to pay that bill rather than pay her rent. For her, it was a choice in supporting her grandson. She also revealed to us in the course of this conversation that there had been a restraining order placed against him. So she really had to think about where her loyalties were lying. And those are the kinds of choices some of our older adults are having to make. In her mind, she was his last chance, and she didn't want to call the police because she thought he might be arrested again. So she was sacrificing her own well-being on behalf of her grandson. Those are kinds of the complicated situations that older adults are finding themselves in. And this case really represents the reluctance of many victims to report or recognize the abuse they're experiencing. In 2013, the city of Portland asked us to have advocates placed within the Elder Crimes Unit. And so we have two advocates working there to help individuals who have been victimized, whose cases don't rise to the level of investigation. So there's a whole level of abuse that's happening that we can also support with. With the expected doubling of older adult population in the next 15 years, elder abuse, neglect, and exploitation is certain to increase. Resource prosecutors have been successful in Oregon in the areas of domestic violence and DUI prosecution, prevention, and detection. Using this successful model, an elder abuse prosecutor would work with prosecutors, law enforcement, and community partners like ours to provide trainings, technical assistance, and upon the request from prosecutors around the state. They would also serve as a liaison between the Oregon Department of Justice, state and local government entities, and community and advocacy groups. Elders in Action wholeheartedly supports this proposal and urges this committee's endorsement. Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Pesquiera, and I'm the Executive Director of Children's Center, and we are the Child Abuse Intervention Center that serves Clackamas County. So we're now going from elders to children. I have submitted my written testimony, so I just give a few brief remarks. I'm speaking on behalf of the 21 Child Abuse Intervention Centers across the state as co-chair of our legislative committee. And I'm here in support of the DOJ's budget, which includes continued funding for the Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Fund, CAMI. The CAMI grants provide critical funding for the statutorily required multidisciplinary response to reports of child abuse. Sadly, child abuse is a prevalent problem that impacts every community in Oregon, with more than 60,000 reports made annually and about 11,000 confirmed victims each year. The intervention centers in Oregon serve more than 6,000 children each year. As the executive director of Children's Center, I can attest to the impact of these grants, not only for allowing Children's Center to provide medical exams, forensic interviews, and family support services, direct services, but also for the entire multidisciplinary team. CAMI funding makes up 21% of our nonprofit center's budget. The funds provide essential support for training MDT members and for coordinating the broad spectrum of partners who are involved in addressing and investigating child abuse cases. Finally, the regional service provider grants funded through CAMI allow child abuse intervention centers and the MDT partners to access local training, peer review consultation, and consulting, which is required to maintain national accreditation and preserve high-quality services. We could not function as a system without these grants. The level of CAMI grant funding has wavered over the years, and after reaching a stable level during the 2007 legislative session, which created uncertainty for centers and resulted in many children not receiving services. Last session, CAMI funding for child abuse intervention was restored to 2009 levels. We're supportive of Senate Bill 5516, which continues that level of funding. Yes, there are counties where this level of funding will not guarantee that staffing will be in place to serve every child, but we're grateful for the stability. We're also grateful for our partnership with the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, and I am happy to provide you with additional information if you need it. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you for your testimony.
Good afternoon, Senator Shields, Representative Williamson, and members of the committee. My name is Allison Kelly, and I am the Chief Executive Officer of Liberty House, which is the Child Abuse Assessment Center located here in Salem that serves Marion and Polk counties. I also submitted written testimony, and I also am here both on behalf of Liberty House and the children we serve and the Oregon Network of Child Abuse and Intervention Centers, the other half of the co-chair with Barbara Pesquiera. My message is very simple. We are here in support of Senate Bill 5516, particularly for the CAMI funding that Barbara described. And I'll make just a couple of brief comments. With respect to child abuse, I can tell you from the front lines in Marion and Polk counties that it continues to be a very serious problem. 8,500 phone calls to the child abuse hotline in these two counties each year, over 1,100 confirmed victims. And the cases range from very, I'm kind of looking for the sound, they're very serious assault, forcible assault, forcible felonious assault, sexual assault, and neglect. The cases that we see are very violent against these children, and one of our responsibilities also involves sitting on the child fatality review teams. So I know across the state of Oregon we had too many fatalities last year. What that statute 418-747 calls for is a coordinated response in every county, and that coordination brings together these teams of really highly specialized, very highly trained professionals, and it makes all the difference. It means children can get the help they need with fewer appointments. More coordination is better for the children and for their families. With child victims, it's important to remember that they are littler and there are many, many pressures on them not to tell. So coming forward is very important. So the CAMI funding is important. It's like Barbara, ours is about 21% to 22% of our overall funding. And we want to let you know how crucial that is also in fulfilling the responsibilities under Carley's Law, which I'm sure you've heard about. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the Attorney General and the DOJ staff. They're amazing to work with. They understand what we do. They support us. And to be really honest, you know, I'll just call your attention to what I put in our letter. Thank you for your support. And I would like to tell you that I would like to be here one day telling you I'm Allison Kelly and we don't need any more money because we've eradicated child abuse. It's been amazing for me to sit in the back and listen. You know, the testimony of the amazing programs we have in place is awesome. I'm glad we have these programs, but I'm kind of stunned at the level of violence in our society against women and children. I really am. I would like to see it go away. I'd like to turn Liberty House into a spa or something. So thank you for your support. And I think all of us, it's a little bit sobering to realize how serious the problem is. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I can say that our first foster daughter received very compassionate services at the CAMI provider in Portland, Cares Northwest, and we really appreciate your work. All right, Susan Stewart, John Trumbo, and John Teague.
I guess I'll go first. First of all, very tough act to follow. My name is Susan Stewart. I'm the executive director of BOMA, Oregon. I represent over 43 million square feet of commercial real estate. Our support of the Fusion Center is why I'm here, but I have to say how humbled I am by listening to this. This suddenly seems so minor compared to what people in this room are dealing with. But briefly, you have my testimony. I won't go ahead and read that, but I do a lot of informational interviews with the press, with people wanting to go into real estate, and I tell them that managing a building, a big high-rise, is like being the mayor of a city. You are responsible for the infrastructure, for security, for safety, for food, everything you can imagine, just like a mayor. And that's why our partnership with the Fusion Center has been key, because working with them, providing education on active shooters, on lessons learned from disasters, on our preparedness fairs, activities, has really helped my members, being a statewide organization, to understand what they do and where the resources are. So I'm here to encourage continued support of the Fusion Center.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Shields and Williamson, members of the committee. I'm John Trumbo. I'm the Vice President and Security Director of the Pendleton Roundup and retired Sheriff of Umatilla County. In 2009, on the opening day of the Roundup, we had a gang-related homicide. It didn't occur on the Roundup grounds. It was across the fence. In 2010, I got a call from Chuck Cogburn, who was the director of our Titan Fusion Center, and he asked if we would like to have a threat assessment done because of the gang-related problems we had had the year before. And 2010 was our centennial, our 100-year celebration, and of course I said yes. I was still currently sheriff at that time, and the sheriff's office was responsible for security during the Roundup. So they came and they did a security survey and a threat assessment, and they also offered to send an analyst and some temporary cameras up if we wanted. So we had them come up, and needless to say, they were fabulous. Their cameras and their analysts kept us from having another homicide. We got a report that a carload of gang members or assumed to be gang members had gotten out of a car, and the analyst was running the cameras. He was able to track them. We were able to find them. We checked them out. They denied any affiliation with the gang, but because of the database that the Titan Fusion Center had, they confirmed that they were all gang members and that they had histories of problems, so we were able to escort them off the property. In 2011, 12, 13, and last year, the Titan Fusion Center sent up an analyst and provided us with instant information that we needed. They also brought up cameras in 11, 12, and 13. In 2014, they helped us design our own camera system, and it's a three-phase. The first phase was done last year. We're in the middle of the second phase, and it's because of their expertise and willingness to help us that we're to that point. The services that they provide us are, we're getting spoiled is what it comes down to, is because when they do a threat assessment for us, we can go into Roundup and 70,000 people that arrive in town knowing that we have a pretty good idea of what to expect, and the local law enforcement can make arrangements and adjustments as necessary because of that. And so I'm here today. I drove up from Pendleton this morning, and I'm driving back to Pendleton tonight, but it's important to me that you know how important it is to the citizens of Umatilla County, citizens of Pendleton, and the Pendleton Roundup at the Titan Fusion Center has a budget so they can continue to provide the services that they do. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming all this way.
Chair Shields and Williamson, members of the committee, my name is John Teague. I'm the Chief of Police in Kaiser. I'm also on the board of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police. First, generally, I want to give appreciation for your support for DOJ and in general. Members of OACP, we appreciate the support, the resources, and frankly, the accessibility that we get at DOJ. Thank you for that. More specifically, I'd like to talk to you about the Fusion Center. You may know that in England, for example, there's about 50 some odd local police agencies. In Oregon, we have more than twice that number. Across the U.S., there's some 18,000 law enforcement agencies, some, I think the figure's like 16,000 local police agencies and sheriff's patrols. We get local policing and local control at the expense of information sharing. Where we get information sharing is through the Titan Fusion Center. I encourage you to support that. We learn about what happens in Albany. We learn about what happens in Woodburn, in St. Petersburg, Florida, through the Titan Fusion Center. We report up items that we think may be of importance locally and nationally to the Titan Fusion Center. The Fusion Center then looks at it and determines whether this is something that needs to be paid more attention to. Prior to Fusion Center being set up, local police agencies operated much like you do, looking at the media and calling upon informal contacts to figure out what's going on. Titan Fusion Center allows us to do that much more professionally, much more thoroughly. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Next, David Berger, David Stuckey, John Bartholomew. And those are the last ones we have. If anybody else would like to testify, you can come up next.
You can go, David.
All right.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chairs Williamson, and members of the subcommittee. My name is David Berger, and I am here as the interim state long-term care ombudsman. Our tiny state agency provides advocacy to residents of licensed care facilities in every county of the state. I am here today in support of the Department of Justice's proposal to create an elder abuse resource prosecutor. Every day at my office, I review elder abuse reports, and while most of the abuse that we're talking about occurs in the community at large, we certainly see some complex cases within licensed care. The use of a special prosecutor like this allows expertise to flow to all the local jurisdictions. I think in 2013 there were 30,000 reports of elder abuse across the state. There's certainly a need for this expertise from the long-term care housing perspective. Oftentimes people end up impoverished because of financial abuse that's perpetrated by someone that they know, and working hard on the front end to protect those vulnerable elders will help them as they enter housing and do so on their own dollar. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields. For the record, I'm John Bartholomew, the Government Relations Director for AARP Oregon, and I'm also speaking on behalf of the Campaign for Oregon Seniors and People with Disabilities, which is a coalition of over 25 organizations, including labor, management, long-term care settings, and a lot of advocacy organizations for individuals who are seniors and people with disabilities. And we all strongly support this proposal to create a elder abuse resource prosecutor at the state level with DOJ. One of the benefits of going this late in the hearing is that so much has already been said about the critical nature of why this is needed, that elder abuse cases are growing and that they are complex, that a lot of local agencies don't have the expertise to really, deal with a lot of the nuances of these cases. The fact that so many of them are family members abusing family members or trusted friends abusing somebody, it makes it a lot more complex than a simple open and shut case. So we really strongly urge this committee to consider that funding request. Thank you.
Co-Chairs Shields, Co-Chairs Williamson, members of the committee, nice to be here today. I'm Dave Stuckey, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. Certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here in front of the Public Safety Ways and Means Committee again. I'm here today on behalf of Major General Hokanson, the Adjutant General for the State of Oregon, and also Governor Brown's appointed Homeland Security Advisor for the State of Oregon. You've heard previous testimony from law enforcement officials here today that talked about holistically the Fusion Center, the Titan Fusion Center, and what it does for the state. List is long in terms of exercises and support, information, criminal justice, or criminal information bulletins, et cetera. There's also a component that I'd like to bring up regarding critical infrastructure and what they do for us. We anticipate that they're going to make money for the state of Oregon. Last year, they were able to work really hard in the risk validation process, which helped Portland and the five contiguous counties of Portland, to include Clark County across the river, to get a higher rating. We think they're going to be somewhere in the money within the Department of Homeland Security arena. That's a little bit greater than it was this previous year. They went from 26 to 21. The director of the Titan Fusion Center, Chuck Cogburn, and some of that staff worked very diligently with the Office of Emergency Management and with my staff as the former director of the Office of Emergency Management to ensure that we're able to get record of exactly what all those counties and what the state of Oregon does from a risk standpoint. And so it's very, very important to us. The Office of Emergency Management has supported the Titan Fusion Center for the last several years. We intend to do that in the future. Obviously, if you live by the grant, you could, in theory, die by the grant. But we're working very diligently to ensure that whatever we can do to help support the Fusion Center, that we will. And so with that concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Would anybody else like to testify today? All right. Good day of hearings, and appreciate the public testimony. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I ask the co-chairs of this committee, where are we on the Fusion Center? Have you talked to the co-chairs? Is that possibility that this is going to be? I can't see us not funding. I don't know what level or what FTEs, but I cannot see us not having this center, based upon the testimony today and my review of the what they're providing and what the little stuff we saw today. I hope that the gentleman from Pendleton spoke to the governor when she was out there about how important Pendleton Rodeo is to that economy and how the safety of the people attending that is. Have you had a chance to, could you tell us if you've had a chance to talk to the co-chairs on this?
Representative Wisnant, the co-chairs are keenly interested in what the subcommittee has to say. I have not discussed this particular item with them, nor the DOJ budget.
Neither have I, at that level.
Watch good wife last night. Did you see what she was? No. I'll take that. I'll take your comments under advisement.
But we do have, we do meet with the co-chairs weekly, and I think that was pretty clear.
I don't even know
clear
what they're asking for in the budget. Or,
Yeah, Mr. Borden.
Co-chairs, members of the subcommittee, representative, it's, I think, $1.2 million is the request.
And how many FTEs?
I believe 4 FTEs.
Yes.
And that is just on the, if I may, that is just on the general fund side. The representative, Director Stuckey talked about the federal grants that the program also receives. Yeah. So, and those will continue, two federal grants that the come over from the military department, and those will continue into the future. So.
Thank you. And Representative Wisnant, we sure will convey to the co-chairs your interest in it, as well as the, I think, generally the entire subcommittee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-chair. I just wanted to say me too to what Representative Wisnant said. So thank you very much.
Well said. Senator Bates.
I just have a quick question for LFO to give me a later time. I consider myself be the confusion center here. The new budgets for me. Looking at the earlier presentation from DAS, I saw that the general fund money for this budget's up $15 million. Our revenue is up about 10 or 11%. That would be more like $6 or $7 million. So the general fund funds are up quite a bit. But I also noticed their other funds revenue was way down. Down about $25 million. Could you get back to me later on that? Kind of, where's the other funds coming up? Is that really general fund being drawn from the agencies they're supporting? I'd like to see the breakdown of that. Are they supporting fewer agencies? Are they seeing fewer cases? Are their costs up? I just like to see what's going on there, because that, to me, this is a budget committee situation, and if they're really down that much in other funds, it's a serious question for me.
Mr. Borden, why don't you answer, give the kind of the,
don't have to do it right now.
The big picture. Well, a lot of it has to do with the other funds of the court proceeding, court cases, right?
Yes, co-chairs. There are several issues in play here. Some of them are related to bond funding. Some are the punitive damage award changes. And others are some one-time grants that are going out of the agency. So what I'll do is, if it's all right, co-chairs, I will prepare a memo for the whole subcommittee and
thanks,
get it to the center.
That's a pretty big swing, so I just want to see what's happening and what we can do to help.
Yeah, we appreciate your interest. All right. Anything else for the good of the order? Mr. Borden, you want to tell us what we have on tap next?
Co-chairs and members of the subcommittee, you're off to state police next for the next few days. So
starting
thank
tomorrow.
You.
Great. Thank you very much, Madam Attorney General, and all of your staff for all the work that you put in this presentation and your responsiveness to our questions. This meeting's adjourned.